5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At Lowe's, get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, install, and more when you spend $2,500 on select major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 2/25 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, Florida. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. This week, we're going to be, as far as I know, we're going to be concluding our catch-up on the Richard Allen trial and the Delphi case. Over the last 2 weeks, you guys heard Andrea Burkhard, both first in episode 18.3, talking about the trial, and then in 18.4, last week, you guys heard her discussing the post-conviction process, which really focused a lot on the law and appeals and the post-conviction proceeding. And this week, we're joined again by attorney Michael Osbrook, who was with us just a few weeks ago. Michael has some direct connection to this case and is joining us today to talk about more of the, I guess the way I think about it, based on our conversations, what I saw in the chat when I was with Andrea, is more of kind of the practical side of the case, more from an investigative standpoint, and some of the legal hurdles as well. Michael has been very much into a lot of the investigation and a lot of the details that have come out since the trial. So first of all, I want to welcome Michael. And Michael, can you talk about how much have you been connected with Richard Allen's case from the trial and post-conviction?
So I got involved in this case pretty accidentally. I wasn't paying much attention to Delphi until the lawyers were removed. Now, the lawyers were there as public defenders, and I was a board member of the Indiana Public Defender Council, and it was a 5-alarm fire. The lawyers, after they were removed, filed appearances to show up pro bono as Rick's counsel of choice. So in addition to the public defense hook, there's a constitutional right to counsel of choice. So I was immediately looking at habeas things. It's a federal right. And I think that had the lawyers stayed removed, there was going to be a federal case. Then when the lawyers got put back, prosecutor filed a contempt information against both the lawyers. And in addition to being the world's expert on Indiana midwifery law, that's obviously an incredibly important area. I'm kind of the world's expert on Indiana contempt law. That just happened. It's not that I've had a bunch of contempt cases. So a guy, an amazing lawyer named Dave Hennessy, was representing Andy and Brad in the contempt proceedings. And pretty early on, I know Dave, and I got in touch with him and said, do you want me to file a motion to dismiss this thing? And he said, absolutely. So I filed an appearance for Brad and Andy. I've never represented Rick Allen formally. I was representing Brad and Andy in the contempt proceedings, and I filed a motion to dismiss the contempt information. It went nowhere. It should have been granted, but that's okay. So then that's when I started getting more interested in the facts of the case. And, you know, Brad and Andy at the very beginning, or close to the beginning, had publicly declared Rick innocent. Defense lawyers don't do that. Then after Brad and Andy were put back as Rick's lawyers by the Indiana Supreme Court, William Libretto went on television. Now, William Libretto, Bill Libretto, was one of the two lawyers whom Judge Gull appointed to replace Brad and Andy. And he had a television interview in which he said they were absolutely innocent. Again, not something defense lawyers generally say. And this is now three lawyers who have said this, who have seen the discovery, seen the investigation. And so I started looking into it more carefully and helping. And you know, I listened to the follow-up on the first session with Andrea. And, you know, Zach was saying he doesn't know whether Rick's innocent or guilty. I can tell you 100% that I think he's innocent. One of the ways I got there was that we have a guy who's 5'4", 5'5", in heels, no criminal history, in the National Guard, honorable discharge, I think, no history of violence, and he's had one heart attack, he has a stent in his heart, and he's subject to depression. He's mentally fragile. There are some profilers who, I mean, I know Jennifer Coffendacker, who's never a friend of defendants. I mean, even she thinks it could not possibly be Rick Allen. So that's kind of where I started. And then, as you know, with innocence work, which isn't something I've done all that long, just the last couple of years, one of the signs of a case of innocence is that every next thing you look at, nothing makes the guy look more guilty.
Exactly. I've always said when I'm screening cases that, you know, I start with the prosecution's case and I try to put a microscope on it. And usually I can figure out pretty quickly as I look closer and dig deeper, if this case gets stronger and stronger, probably not an innocent person. But if you peel one layer back from the state's case, in every layer, their case gets weaker and starts to fall apart, that's usually not a good sign.
Right. And the other thing is that I'm not getting paid to do any of this. And I'm not going to spend my time on the planet if I'm not pretty convinced this guy's innocent. I mean, it was the same with habeas cases. You know, with habeas cases, and maybe it's the same with innocence cases. You got to figure out all the ways you're going to lose before you can even think about how you're going to win. And, you know, if I'd seen anything, and I've seen quite a bit that made Rick Allen look guilty, I'd be out. I'd be on to the next thing.
Right.
So the contempt thing was over. I started helping out the defense unofficially. I took them some external hard drives and some USB hubs so they could put the 20 terabytes all together. And I mean, they had them on 20, I think it's 25 different drives. And they, you know, they had to do it drive by drive. You can't do it that way.
That's how it was turned over to them in discovery?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen them all, and some of them are just old drives from PCs. I hate to think I would not be confident that data uncopied is going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And over the summer of 2024, you know, I'd send them stuff. Sometimes I'd hear back from them. Sometimes I wouldn't. I really didn't expect to. You know, the trial happened. I wasn't really much involved with that. I was watching from the outside like everybody else. Then Rick was convicted. He was sentenced. And it took a while for the trial lawyers to come out of a funk after the loss. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. I mean, it has to be crushing. But there's a thing in Indiana called a motion to correct error. And I got on them pretty early. I think I let Thanksgiving go by. But I got on them pretty early after the conviction I started on the motion to correct error. And then Rick was sentenced on the 20th of December. And that's when the 30 days for motion to correct error starts. And so I really started pushing them to file one because there were some real issues that needed to be raised. And kind of in the last week, they got on board and we put together something. And that's where the van video evidence came out.
Okay.
And the Reese Davis evidence.
What was the Reese Davis evidence?
So Reese Davis in 2017, in May of 2017, was in prison with Ron Logan. And in the middle of May of 2017, via his then-girlfriend, he got a tip in to law enforcement that ended up in the Orion tip file. The Orion tip file is this, Orion was this giant database of tips. And he got in a tip that said Ron Logan had confessed to him.
Oh, that's right. That's who Reese Davis is. Yeah.
And by the way, for sake of transparency, a number of years ago, I did some work for Reese Davis on his problems. So what had happened at trial, so one of the things Reese Davis had said was that in this 2017 tip was that Ron Logan had used a box cutter. And that's what Ron Logan had told him. Well, at the trial, Dr. Kaur, the pathologist, for 7 years, he'd always said his opinion had remained unchanged. And it was two blades were used, one serrated, one straight edged. For the first time at trial, he said, well, you know, I was looking at my tool bench and I kind of had an aha moment and it could have been a box cutter. So that went into the motion to correct the error.
With that, what was the status with Davis's confession or Davis's statement about the confession with Ron Logan? Did the defense have that in discovery and weren't allowed to use it, or was it not turned over in discovery?
No, they had. So Ron Logan was on the third party list of people. I had the Reese Davis tip from the defense, so they certainly had it. And I want to be clear that the only thing that I am interested in at all is getting Rick Allen out of prison as quickly as possible. I am not interested in what can be done now to achieve that. And I am absolutely not interested in blaming anybody for anything, except maybe Judge Gull. And I will quote Andrea Burkhart on the subject of Judge Gull. And that is, she said, I've seen a lot of bad judging. This is a quote. I've seen a lot of bad judging, but I've never seen anything like this.
And yeah, it was from all of us non-lawyers watching the process through Andrea and Bob Mata and the people that had been there. It was just like, just hearing, it was just like one thing after another that just didn't make any sense. It didn't compute to how these trials are supposed to work based on what we knew going into that. It's crazy.
So, I mean, just to go off on a quick tangent here, I know that one of the things you all talked about was this learned witness thing in Indiana and permitting Trooper Harshman to testify that the voice he heard on the Bridge Guy video was Rick Allen's. That's really interesting. I mean, learned witness, experience, whatever. There were experts that law enforcement consulted, audio experts, because they wanted to match the voice on the BG video to Rick Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Law enforcement was told, we have to have 14 words to do that. They don't have 14 words. So the experts can't do it, so I don't know how Harshman can.
But he was allowed to testify to it in front of the jury.
Yeah, he was allowed to testify to it.
Yeah, as a non-expert and with an audio file that the expert said it's impossible to do.
Right. So after the motion to correct error was denied, just about the time the notice of appeal was filed, another lawyer and I was actually asked to do this, but I had contacted Kathy Allen with some information I developed just because I wanted to let her know something positive was happening. And we got to talking and I suggested that another lawyer and I, really brilliant lawyer, Kara Winnicky, maybe the best post-conviction lawyer in the state, you know, basically start an investigation. The idea was never to actually file a post-conviction case. It was just to start the investigation. Now, you know that as a case ages, evidence disappears, witnesses die. In another case that I'm working on, a really critical witness just died at the age of something like 44. And I mean, it's a disaster. So, I mean, Karen and I were never going to be the lawyers on any post-conviction case. also because we were kind of witnesses to what was going on behind the scenes. So when an actual, I mean, we'd actually be witnesses in any post-conviction case, but that didn't mean we couldn't do an investigation. So Kathy asked me to draw up a retainer agreement. I did that, sent it to her, sent it to her lawyer, and nothing came of that. So, I mean, nobody ever said no, but nobody ever said yes. So Kara's kind of out, and I haven't given up. I have some stuff. I have phone data. I have the Orion tip file. We now have the exhibits to work from, the ones that have been publicly released. And so and when I say I've been working on it, you know, one of the things I always told my class is that my habeas class is the criminal defense's group effort. And there is just a tremendous group of people out there doing amazing work. Now, there are people who are working on stuff that will be incredibly useful at any retrial, Rick guess. I'm trying to, I'll mention one in particular. There's a woman in Ohio. Her YouTube channel is Case by Case. That's Case X Case. And she's done unbelievable work on who was on the trail, the out to the bridge when, and just basically blown up the state's case. But that is not going to get Rick a new trial. I'm trying to focus on stuff that is likely to at least contribute to his getting a new trial.
I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Are you a fraud-paying American? It's a fact that one in four honest, hardworking, tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. With LifeLock Identity Theft Protection, though, if your identity is stolen, they fix it, guaranteed, and get you your money back. Last year, the IRS flagged over $16 billion in refunds for identity fraud. That's billions of dollars that could come from your salary, overtime, or second job. But this year, you don't need to stay a victim. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. And if your information does fall into the wrong hands, only LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists who are backed by the Million Dollar Protection Package. Because this tax season, fraud paying American is something no American should have to claim. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
So to talk about that a little bit, the other thing I tell my students, there are always four questions in these cases. And the four questions are, where are you? Well, where we are is Rick. Rick is in Oklahoma in prison. Mm-hmm. Where the case is it's on appeal. And two possible things are going to happen from that appeal. One, it's going to be affirmed. Two, it's going to get reversed. That could take a long time, especially if the court sends it back down for a Franks hearing before deciding the case, which they well could do. And I really have doubt that Rick's appeal will be final until sometime next year. If it's reversed, then there's the retrial thing. Well, what do you want? Obviously, if there's a retrial, the sooner the case is investigated, the better. And maybe you develop evidence that prevents the retrial, that makes it impossible. Alternatively, if Rick's conviction is affirmed, you're into a post-conviction case. I mean, that'll certainly be filed.
Right.
And then you're going to have to, you know, do the investigation. And as again, we're talking, I mean, if it's a state public defender's office, they could expedite it. But their backlog at last count, the state public defender herself, not long ago, testified in front of the Supreme Court, their backlog is 2 years. I mean, let's say it's only a year that Rick has to wait. And that's before the state PD's office starts to investigate.
Right.
I mean, we have a case that next week, it will be 9 years since the girls disappeared and were murdered. That's typically when I get a habeas case and all the state stuff is over. I mean, we're talking about a relatively old case now. And I can tell you there are witnesses who are old who need to be interviewed.
Yeah, because the conviction just happened into 2024, but we forget this is a 2017. It was 9 years. Actually, the week this episode airs, it'll be 9 years ago that the actual murders happened.
Right. So any investigation now would get ahead of either a retrial or a post-conviction case, whichever way the appeal turns out. There's no downside to it. And so the one thing, I don't want to bury the lead. There is a ton of business video, that is to say, video from security cameras of various businesses around town. We know that's in the discovery. That was actually made publicly known in a sort of printout, a list of the defense's discovery. It is known exactly which discs it is on. Really brilliant woman in Texas, whom I'll talk about again later, did a map of where that video is. And there are two things. I haven't seen it. It needs to be looked at. I know the defense hasn't looked at it. I know some other people are trying to get a hold of it who are entitled.
Wait, the defense had it in discovery but didn't look at it before trial?
No. I think what was said was there was too much of it and it was irrelevant.
That's frustrating.
And in addition to providing time, I'm pretty convinced Rick's car is going to be on it. So I started to say this really brilliant woman in Texas has done a map of where all these places are, and there's basically no way Rick Allen could have gotten to the trail without going by these cameras, at least some of them. So that needs to be looked at. And not only would you get a time, but Rick was never certain or definite about whether he was driving the black Ford Focus, which normally Kathy would have been driving, or whether he was driving his gray Ford 500 sedan. So if you get a time and a different car, it's a different case.
Right. Well, can you explain real, because I'm not sure everybody is fully familiar with all, I certainly wasn't.
So part of the state's case was that Rick took an incredibly roundabout route to the trail to park, and that his car, his black Ford Focus, shows up at about 1:27 on the afternoon of the 13th, and then he goes to park and shows up on this. It's the business is called the Hoosier Harvest Store, and law enforcement alleged that this black car is Rick's black Ford Focus. Going back to this woman in Texas, she took a blow up that was one of the state's pieces of evidence, lined up the taillights with the rear wheels, and then lined up the tail. There's another picture of Rick's car in 2022, and lined up the taillights with the wheels, and they're not at all the same. I mean, they are way off. Huge difference.
And you should, and by the way, for those of you guys listening, we're recording this 2 weeks ahead of time, but when this airs, Michael has put together some documents with some photos kind of explaining some of the stuff we're going to be talking about here right now about the car. So the photo of Rick's car, you said from 2022, where you had a line you could show in relation to the rear tire where the taillight is. That picture of Rick's car, was that from evidence? Was that a trial exhibit?
That was a trial exhibit. So when they executed the search warrant in October of 2022, they took pictures of Rick's car in the garage. And yeah, as this woman in Texas's work was from trial exhibits. The other thing I discovered yesterday is that if you look at Rick's car, he has an antenna attached to a shark fin mount on towards the back of the car in the middle. And the car in the Hoosier Harvest Store video does not have that.
Yeah, so that would be a huge, because there was another piece too in that document you sent me yesterday where it looks like the car in the video that they said was Rick Allen's car, that there's some kind of a weird box looking piece on the back of the hatchback.
There is. And I raised, you know, I wrote a 31-page memo to the lawyers back in April of last year with a bunch of things that I thought needed to be done. The black box was included. I've continued to try and find out what that black box is, but you know, as I said to you in an email, maybe the Truth and Justice Army can figure it out.
Yeah, so we'll definitely get that published for people to take a look at. It's you know, just know it's a little tricky because it was hard for me to get anything definitive because the picture of the car that they said was Rick's was, you know, it's a screenshot from a surveillance photo, and it's far away and it's kind of blurry, so it's hard to really look at details. I couldn't quite tell what I was looking at personally, but I'm sure other people will be able to look at it and you're able to pick it out a little better than I was. But to me, man, that the taillight line, that was, it's hard to argue with that. I don't know how you could argue with it.
You can't. I think that's pretty conclusive that it's not Rick's car. So, you know, you can say it's a small piece of the state's case, but it's a piece. I mean, it just knocks it out. As I said, the business video could end this case.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's because if I understand you right, you said business video singular, but that file is video surveillance from multiple businesses.
Right.
All over the place.
Right. And you also don't know what other cars. I mean, we know what a lot of, I mean, there's the whole third party thing. We know what the cars are of a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. It'd be really interesting to see what else shows up on there.
Right. Are all these cameras in, I'm not familiar with kind of the layout of Delphi beyond just the immediate area. Are these cameras in a business area that's relatively close to the trailhead?
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you what, when we get off, I'll send you the map.
Okay.
Put it up, but you can see there's really no way Rick Allen, unless he went this roundabout route, which he didn't, he would have to go by these cameras, some of them.
And it's frustrating on the defense side. It's also, even for me, even more frustrating on the law enforcement side that they had all these videos. If you see him driving to the trail at 12:30 and leaving the trail at 1:00, driving the other way or whatever, they would know immediately they've got the wrong guy. He's not there. We have video proof that he left. And for them to have not fully investigated those videos is even more frustrating than the defense not doing so.
I know that one of the things you raised with Andrea said she'd like to do is get the DNA tested. And that's not, without the agreement of the prosecutor, that's not going to happen. At least not before an attempted retrial or before or during a post-conviction case. And that's because there is a statute under which you can do post-conviction DNA testing. But the Indiana Supreme Court has said that a request to test DNA under the statute is a post-conviction petition. It's not what the statute says. It's just what the Indiana Supreme Court said back in 2003, I think. Because you only get one post-conviction petition as of right, nobody is. So if you file one, lose. To get a successive petition, you've got to go to the Court of Appeals and ask permission to file a successive. Nobody is going to use up Rick's one post-conviction petition as of right now to try to get post-conviction DNA testing. It doesn't make sense.
So do I understand that right? So if he were to, say, file a post-conviction petition to test DNA, and let's say it gets denied,
right,
he no longer has the right to file like an 1107 writ
petition. He'd have to ask permission to do that. And the permission, you know, there are standards for that. You know, he might get granted. I mean, there would be enough claims that would be he might get granted, but you're not going to give up your post-conviction petition as of right just to do DNA testing.
Right.
Which... you don't know what the results are going to be, except it'll be, we know it'll exclude Rick more, but you don't know if you're going to be able to actually identify perpetrators.
This would be, I assume this would get granted by the Court of Appeals, but in theory, from what I'm understanding here, isn't it possible the way they ruled on that law that you could file your petition for DNA testing, get the results and they're favorable, maybe they identify somebody else, and now you can't file a writ of actual innocence with that information because you don't have the right to file another writ or file another petition?
Well, there are some tricky things you could do. I've suggested them in another case, but I don't think with a case this big, anybody wants to take the risk.
So that process would have to be, if you burned your petition for DNA testing, got favorable results, the process that's supposed to work, you then have to go to the Court of Appeals and request the opportunity to file a successive petition.
Maybe. You might also just be able to amend the pending petition that tested the DNA, under which you tested the DNA. In a case as big and as important as Rick's, at least at this point, nobody's going to be doing any fancy procedural experimentation.
Right.
So that's the DNA testing. Now, we talked about the car, the antenna, the box, the wheel alignment. There are two witnesses who need to be deposed. One I've interviewed. The other is scared to death. The first witness I've interviewed is certainly subject to further investigation, very credible. Two witnesses who talked to law enforcement within days of the murders that completely destroy the state's timeline.
Are you able to share any details about that, or is it still all?
No, I think that's as far as I can go with that. And that's, forensic evidence is always going to be what it is. And I don't have much trouble with that. Witnesses are a little different, and I don't really want to throw witnesses into the Delphi washing machine.
Right.
But there's also possibly, and I don't know, and it's investigation. I mean, you know what investigation is, Bob. Investigation is some things you investigate don't produce anything.
Right.
Or don't produce anything useful. But there is almost certainly, somewhere between probably and almost certainly, a third sketch by a witness out that law enforcement has that I don't believe anybody's ever seen. It would be interesting.
Was it revealed at trial? I know Andrea touched on it. Where the sketches that we did see, where those came from?
So the Youngbridge guy sketch came from Betsy Blair. So she saw somebody who was young, almost beautiful, and had poofy hair, not Rick Allen. And then Sarah Carbaugh did the original sketch that was released. I think she did that in June of 2017. and she did the old Bridge Guy sketch. And why they put that out instead of Betsy Blair's, which was done practically immediately, and she said it was a 10 out of 10, I don't know. Again, I know you want to focus on this going forward, and I do too, but one of the just incredible questions to which I don't have an answer is why in 2019, they've been investigating this case for 2 years, gotten nowhere apparently, right? Gotten nowhere. And so they hold this press conference and they release this young Bridge Guy sketch of Betsy Blair's, which she said was a 10 out of 10, which is a complete...
And that's someone, what? Someone she said that's someone she saw on the trail that day.
That's on the, not on the trail, on the bridge, standing on platform one.
Okay.
And you release this sketch, which is nothing like the sketch you immediately released, looks nothing like Bridge Guy in the Bridge Guy video, but over 2 years, you haven't done the DNA testing? I mean, I'm sorry, I just, it's like, you know, do the DNA testing first, maybe, or do it too. I mean, if you've gotten nowhere in 2 years, why aren't you doing the DNA test?
Well, why, and maybe we can talk about that for a minute. I didn't know much about this until Andrea brought it up, or I didn't remember much about it, but why wouldn't they run the DNA? Was it ever discussed at trial? Or does anybody know, like, why didn't they, because they had DNA on the crime scene, on the bodies.
On the genitals.
That they never tested.
Yeah.
So this is this unsolved case that they're trying so hard to solve for all these years. They never, ever thought, well, let's try the DNA. Like, did they ever explain why the hell they never did that?
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Every year, people make the same fitness goal, train harder. But most fail because recovery gets ignored, especially connective tissue that muscles depend on to grow. Frog Fuel was developed by Navy SEALs and perfected by a Stanford-trained scientist, delivering 15 grams of nano-hydrolyzed collagen protein that digests in just 15 minutes. It's science-backed and ready to drink. No mixing, no sugar, no junk. This year, don't just train harder, recover smarter. Go to frogfuel.com. That's frogfuel.com. Stay unbreakable.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
They didn't test the hair that was wrapped around... And I want to say it was Abby's finger. I'm not an expert on what DNA there was. Another woman in Colorado, I think, is sort of the expert on where the DNA was found. But there was a hair on one of the wrapped around the finger of one of the girls that they didn't test until trial. Turns out it was Kelsey German's, Liberty's sister. And now you might want to ask, and a lot of people find it suspicious. I don't. Well, I find it interesting, given what the girls went through, if they crossed that creek, went down the hill and crossed the creek, which I don't happen to believe they did, but you know, that's subject to disagreement. How does the hair survive wrapped around her finger?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Around either girl's finger. I don't care which one.
Yeah, I mean, all day walking around. I guess it depends on how it's wrapped around. If it was, because wasn't Libby wearing, or Abby was wearing, one of Kelsey's sweatshirts or something? Am I remembering that correctly, or am I wrong about that?
Well, Libby was wearing one of Kelsey's sweatshirts, supposedly. Again, there are people who are the experts on the clothing. What we do know is Abby was dressed in Libby's clothes at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the business video of the car we've already knocked out. By the way, to go back on about innocence, you know, people who put stock in Rick Allen's so-called confessions, I hate calling them that, their statements, whatever they are, you're not going to convince them. And that's kind of, you're never going to convince them of Rick's innocence. And you talk to Andrea, but I think you asked Andrea the question, and I don't want to get, well, this is being aired later, so I'm not getting ahead of the game. I think you asked her if she were going to reverse Rick's conviction, what would it be on? And I think she said the right to present a defense, the third party evidence, you know, that he mm-hmm. should have been able to get in. Certainly possible. And I know that disagreeing with Andrea Burkhardt about anything is at one's own peril. The easy opinion for the Indiana Court of Appeals, or the Indiana Supreme Court, who's eventually going to get this, is on the van video. Mm-hmm. And that's because, and this feeds into the confessions, because if you reverse on the third party evidence, the court can say, yeah, that should have been let in as part of his right to present a defense. The standard for that, but was the error harmless beyond a reasonable doubt? Confessions, Justice Scalia said, are the queen of evidence. Actually, that's an old British saying. And a court can very easily say, yeah, it's bad that the third party evidence didn't come in, but we've got all these so-called confessions. They won't call them so-called. They'll call them confessions. And so the error of not letting the third-party evidence in was, in fact, harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. So the standard for the van video is quite different. And so that's what's known as a NAPU or a Glossop claim. So Glossop is a case that came down very recently from the U.S. Supreme Court. I think it was January of last year, or even December of 2024.
The Richard Glossop case.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So independent of the defense, the prosecution has a duty not to present evidence that it knows is false or reasonably should know is false. And if they do put on that evidence, they have to correct it. They put on Brad Weber saying, oh, I got home about 2:30 to fit their timeline. They insisted the state's case absolutely relies on the van getting there, interrupting Rick Allen. He hustles the girls across the creek and kills them by about 2:32. Van video, which they had and the defense had also, shows that Brad Weber didn't get home in his van until 2:44. He certainly didn't get to anywhere he'd interrupt Rick before 2:44. So that couldn't have happened. State had it. The defense had it. And Nick McClellan, the prosecutor, didn't correct Brad Weber's testimony. The standard for reversal when the prosecution puts on evidence it knows or reasonably should know is false, is any reasonable possibility the false evidence contributed to the verdict.
So it doesn't have the reasonable doubt standard.
No, it's completely different. And it's a real easy opinion for the Court of Appeals to write. They don't have to get into the whole third-party mess. They don't have to get into all the other mess. It really is no mess, no fuss. I'm not saying they'll do it. I'm just saying, had you asked me the question that you asked Andrea Burkhardt, her answer, certainly a reasonable answer. My answer is, I'd be writing to reverse on the Glossop thing because it's an easy day for me as a judge and it's a do-over.
I thought I remembered something from trial, and I meant to bring this up with Andrea last week, and I forgot, or I just didn't get to it, so I'll ask you. The video of the van that tells us it wasn't there until 2:44. Wasn't there an issue, or was that a different video where there was the time on the camera was off, and they were, and there was a lot of arguing about what if the time was actually valid, like it showed PM instead of AM or something?
That's the van. Well, the Hoosier Harvest Store video is also off, but I think everybody agrees that it was off by 54 minutes. The security video on which the van appears at 2:44 on the 13th is off by 12 hours. There was no testimony taken as that. It might be off by 12 hours and a few more minutes. The other thing is, though, that there is an FBI subject information sheet for Brad Weber that says, so Brad Weber's driving in. He drives down this private drive that goes to his mother's house. And the FBI subject information sheet says, Brad Weber's phone starts pinging at the house at 2:50 p.m. So it lines up with the 12-hour difference on the video pretty perfect.
Okay, because I remember discussing that back at trial, thinking that I didn't know anything about the FBI piece of it. It's like, well, we can't just assume that it's PM and not AM.
This is not trial stuff.
Right.
This only came out at the motion to correct error. So any argument about time on video at trial was probably about the Hoosier Harvest Store video.
Okay. Well, it must have been after the trial, because what I specifically remember was the video in question we were talking about was that it said AM instead of PM. And, you know, one side was arguing, well, it's just off by 12 hours. And the other side was like, we just know it's off. We don't know if it's 12 hours.
Uh-huh.
But I hadn't heard anything about this FBI data. Did that come out of trial, or is that new information?
That was the FBI subject information sheet was part of the motion to correct error.
Okay. So we didn't see that until later.
Backing up the video.
Okay. So the video says 2:44. FBI shows his phone didn't start pinging there until 2:50.
And by the way, that lines up. I know that the state at trial put on evidence that Brad Weber clocked out of work at 2:02. So it's about a 20. I did the drive. A reporter at the trial did the drive. We did it independently, not knowing about each other. And we both came up with exactly the same times, even at 2:20, even at 2:02. It's 100 yards from the door of the Subaru parking lot, door of the Subaru plant to the parking lot alone.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it's a big parking lot. Even at 2:02, there's really no way he got back by about 2:30, but maybe. What we do know is, and it didn't come out at the trial, Brad Weber was in the Subaru parking lot until 2:12, because he was delivering a trailer to a business acquaintance or a friend. I don't know what the relationship was. And at 2:12, he's texting from the parking lot, having not heard from the friend, okay, I'm leaving it in the southeast end. See ya. So he's in the parking lot at 2:12. I mean, he may have checked out of work at 2:02, but he doesn't leave there. He's not starting his car until 2:12.
And how long was the drive?
The drive's flooring it. I was going really, I won't say flooring it. I was driving really fast. Reporter was driving really fast. And I think we both came up with 28 minutes and something.
Yeah. So no way he's there by 2:30. Impossible.
No. So further investigation, it turns out that there are two more confessions that need to be investigated. So there's a third person to whom Ron Logan confessed, apparently.
Who are the two? I know there's Reese Davis. Who was the second?
Oh, the second is a guy named James Haas in Newcastle. He's been moved. Interestingly, I believe he's been moved to, I think it was Haas, or was he the prison conditions? I think there were two confessions in Newcastle, one to Reese and one to, and I think it was Haas. And it turns out that Ron Logan confessed to somebody else while he was at Newcastle. So he was at Newcastle from March of 2017. He was put back in for his probation violation and he was out again on house arrest, I believe, in January of 2018 after Nick McClelland had become the prosecutor and agreed to let him do home detention instead of staying in prison.
Do you know, this is a little off topic, I mean, we're talking about Ron Logan. The question that I've been asking for over a year now, you have access to lots of material that I've never seen. Have you come across anything to explain how or why Ron Logan was ever cleared, or if he ever was?
No, I only know that the people who were pushing Ron Logan in law enforcement were shunned.
Okay, beyond that, because we know it's pretty obvious from the FBI probable cause affidavits, it seemed like they saw him as a viable suspect.
Well, it's an interesting question whether, so they get the tip from Reese Davis in 2017, in May. So the probable cause affidavit for the FBI, they do the search in March 2017. And the Reese Davis tip comes in May of 2017. In June of 2017, a state police officer, actually two of them, I think Jerry Holman was one of them, but the only one we hear about, his last name is Hansard. He takes a bunch of illegible notes. They interview Reese Davis. There's some very interesting stuff in that. It's all in the motion to correct error. I don't remember it all now. It's between, if you got probable cause to search Ron Logan's place in March, and then you have his confession to Reese Davis in May, followed up on in June, you think there was probable cause to arrest him at that point.
Right. Especially if you compare it to whatever standard they use for Rick Allen.
Yeah. And the other thing is, it's certainly been made public, the FBI took pictures of Ron Logan's house when they executed the search warrant. And the place is an absolute mess, except for the spick and span, shiny, clean, brand new bathroom that is so clean you could literally eat phyllo dough off the toilet seat. And the information from a former girlfriend of Ron Logan's is that the plumbing in that picture, not only has the bathroom been renovated, the plumbing's been switched to the other side. So they had to change all the pipes, which if you wanted to get rid of blood in the pipes, I mean, you need to get rid of the pipes.
Right.
I'm not saying that's what happened, but it's certainly odd that there's this brand shiny, clean bathroom. But no, I do not, to answer your question again, I think directly, I don't think Ron Logan was ever cleared.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Every year, people make the same fitness goal, train harder. But most fail because recovery gets ignored, especially connective tissue that muscles depend on to grow. Frog Fuel was developed by Navy SEALs and perfected by a Stanford-trained scientist, delivering 15 grams of nano-hydrolyzed collagen protein that digests in just 15 minutes. It's science-backed and ready to drink. No mixing, no sugar, no junk. This year, don't just train harder, recover smarter. Go to frogfuel.com. That's frogfuel.com. Stay unbreakable.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, rechalk. Still aiming.
While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, and that's been, I'm not saying I think he did it, anything. It's just, you know, as an investigator, as I'm going through what I know, what we know from the documents, it's like everything I see looks like they're investigating a very viable suspect, and then just he's not a suspect. And the folks that, you know, believe in Rick Allen's guilt, you know, always say, well, he was cleared. Like, don't care. They cleared him. I'm like, well, okay, but show me where and I'll move on. But I haven't seen where he was cleared or any reason why he was cleared or where a decision was made that he wasn't a suspect. It just, they just seem to just stop.
So Zach was saying everybody like he loves talking about Delphi. I think one of the reasons that Delphi has captured a lot of people's attention is it's one of those stories kind of like Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 that went down in the southern Indian Ocean. There is no set of facts out there that explains everything, and that there is some fact that gets in the way of almost any theory that you come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems with Ron Logan, if you take the defense case, Ron Logan could not have been acting alone, because at 5:35, I think it is, according to the defense's phone expert, somebody plugs headphones into Libby German's phone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at 5:21, Ron Logan is off in Lafayette at the famous fish store buying some ginormous number of fish. There is the receipt. That's a fact not really in dispute. He could not have gotten home from Lafayette by 5:35 if he left at 5:21. So unless he had Libby's phone with him and had headphones and was plugging them in his car on the way back, which seems really, really, really unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else was plugging those headphones in at 5:35, which
right.
means there's well, somebody else involved.
Yeah, and it creates such an interesting conundrum, because in order for, say, the state to make that argument, then they have to acknowledge what they put on in trial, which was arguing against the fact that there was headphones plugged in. You know, everything just gets tangled up because they had famously went out and Googled it and said it was it didn't necessarily mean there were headphones plugged in. It could have just been dirt or water, whatever, which I don't agree with. But that's the point they made before. And now they would have to reverse that in order to argue what you're talking about.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I try not to ignore facts. I mean, I will say I'm not a phone expert, so I can't speak to it. So this audio input output information in the phone data has various codes associated with it. And you actually have to look into the database to see what audio input output activity means. One is headphone activity, headphones in, headphones out. Except there's a woman in Australia who's done a lot of detailed work. I don't agree. She has a whole cold shock theory about what happened to the phone, but I don't agree with that. But she has come up with something very interesting, saying that a one on this operating system, which is iOS 10.1, does not necessarily mean headphones. I don't know. You know, mm-hmm. I'd want to go to Stacey Eldridge, the defense's phone expert, and ask her, is that true? I can't tell you. There is also, and again, I don't know what code's associated with it. I can look at, you know, the reports generated by the cell, by the various programs. There is audio input activity. Starts 2 seconds after the Bridge Guy video ends, and then ends 5.5 minutes later. I have no idea what it means. In terms of further investigation, one of the things I know Stacey Eldridge said on one of Bob Mata's live, There is a lot more she could have said, but she wasn't asked. Somebody needs to talk to her about that. What more could she have said that she was not asked? The other thing, she on a YouTube live with another person, she didn't say it explicitly, but boy, she came right up close to it saying there was more motion on the phone. In terms of further investigation, she needs to be asked that. What more motion was there on the phone?
Right.
The other thing is, I was told this by one of the defense investigators. They got, so Apple Health registers upward movement on the phone. And you know, how many flights of stairs you go up. And at a certain point, the phone goes up two flights of stairs.
Yeah.
There's no place where the state's alleging that it went up two flights, that it went up two flights, but that's what the phone data says. Apparently, there is another database that has downward movement in it. I mean, there's an accelerometer in there, so it's not being registered by health. Apple has something else that's using the accelerometer to register downward movement. And, you know, I was told that Stacey Eldred said it would take her about 20 hours to tease that out. And I think that needs to be done.
Did they talk about any of the accelerometer data and motion of the phone at trial at all? As far as they did, right? Because didn't they say that the phone never moved after a certain point?
Yeah, that never moved after 2:32.
And was that based on cell phone like location data, or was that based on this information we're talking about now, the internal data in the phone?
Based on the Apple Health data.
The Apple Health data. So after 2:32, the phone never moves.
That's the claim.
Okay.
Now there's a whole bunch of activity after 2:32.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't want to get into the weeds of the cell phone data, but I think that the cell phone data is a mess. I'm not sure it should have ever been admitted, but I'm not a cell phone expert. All I can do is read, and I am assured that Stacey Eldridge, the state's expert, has said through other channels, there's no evidence the cell data has been maliciously tampered with. Okay. I will tell you the most suspicious thing that I have seen is there is data usage. So in the 2024 extraction, there's a section for data usage. And there's data usage every day. And I mean every day. In fact, the phone is factory reset on 4th of February. And there is data usage every day until February 13th, the day the girls disappear. And there is nothing for that day.
No data usage.
Anybody cares about. There is no data usage information.
For the entire day before.
The next data usage is at 4:33 in the morning when supposedly the phone miraculously comes on and these 17 text messages and things come in.
I'm just trying to wrap my brain around that. Even on Snapchat or anything would have been using data the whole time.
Well,
right?
let's talk about that. There is a section in called uploads. So supposedly Libby took two Snapchat photos, one of an empty bridge and another of Abby on the bridge. Now the photo of Abby on the bridge was never found in the phone. The empty bridge is, but there's a section called uploads in one of the reports, but I haven't found anything that contradicts it. In the upload section, there are Snapchat uploads, a few Snapchat uploads in July of 2016 and nothing else.
And she was actively using Snapchat for the next 8 months or whatever it is.
Somebody was. And that's another question about, you know, was this phone synced to an iPad? So, I mean, you have to realize this phone data. A, it can be infected by the iPad because when state police turned it back on, they didn't isolate it. And so It synced a whole bunch of stuff from the cloud. Now, Stacey Eldred said, yeah, you can figure out what that is. But the other thing is the phone was given back to the family. Now, I don't know the chronology of that, but it was given back to them for some time. I mean, there's a, you know, it's tethered to a hotspot in September of 2017. But the point about these things, I'm not talking about text, right? We can all delete text messages and that sort of stuff, right? None of the stuff I'm talking about, not the upload section, not the data usage section. There's a third thing that I find pretty suspicious, and that is in the 2024 Cellebrite data, every single, there, I think 22, there's a section cell tower information. Every single one's been deleted. None of these things are things that users can. You can't go into your phone and delete the cell tower data. You can't go into your phone and delete the data usage data. You can't go into your phone and delete the uploads data. So, you know, I think some explanation for, I call these anomalies, some explanation needs to be made for why these anomalies in the phone.
Yeah, it's just like so many other things, frustrating, because it seems like even in 2017, with the technology in phones, we should be able to get a lot more out of it than we did. Moving forward, we're over an hour now. Do you have anything else on your list that I want to make sure we get through anything that you wanted to make sure we cover today?
You know, I think that's, I mean, in a way, it's only a start, but I think the major things are out there that need to be done. And but you know, I did say, so when I say somebody, you know, there are two witnesses that need to be deposed. There is actually. Remember, I said there are four things you got to do. You know, what do you want? Where are you going to go to get it? And how are you going to get there? Well, the way you get people deposed is you go to the prosecutor and say, these folks are going to testify to this in a deposition. We can do this the hard way, or we can do it the easy way, and you can agree. And if he doesn't agree, which he won't, there's Trial Rule 27, the specific Indiana Trial Rule 27 specifically provides for deposing witnesses to preserve testimony, either for a later case or for a retrial.
So you should be able to pull this off even without the prosecutor's support.
Yeah.
Well, that's all. All this has been super interesting. The entire chat has been interesting. We are this week, I'm not sure if we're going to do it on Monday or Tuesday, so pay attention to social media, but we're going to do our usual follow-up episode. But for this one, because I'm sure all of you listening to this on Sunday are going to be developing all kinds of other questions and things you want to talk about. So Michael has agreed to join me and Zach and Janet in our follow-up this week. So you guys will be able to ask any questions then. He'll be around to help ask the questions you send on social media. He'll also be live on YouTube at the time. So pay attention to the post about when that live recording is going to be happening. And Michael's got his fingers up. He's got one more thing.
Yeah, I wanted to address, so in your follow-up, somebody tried to take you to task about solitary confinement versus administrative segregation. Administrative segregation in Westville is solitary confinement. And for anybody who thinks that was anything other than solitary confinement, one of Rick's experts at trial testified that the conditions Rick was kept in another context would be a war crime.
Well, there you have it. And this is why we're going to have Michael with us this week on the follow-up. So we'll talk to you guys then. Michael, thanks so much for joining me. It's been great talking to you, and we'll talk again here in a couple of days.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kay Wood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free,
a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Are you a fraud-paying American? One in four tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity fraud. With LifeLock, if your identity is stolen, they fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Last year, billions in refunds were stolen. Could be from your salary, overtime, or second job. Gone. But this year, you don't need to stay a victim. Because this tax season, fraud-paying American is something no American should have to claim. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Every year, people make the same fitness goal, train harder. But most fail because recovery gets ignored, especially connective tissue that muscles depend on to grow. Frog Fuel was developed by Navy SEALs and perfected by a Stanford-trained scientist, delivering 15 grams of nano-hydrolyzed collagen protein that digests in just 15 minutes. It's science-backed and ready to drink. No mixing, no sugar, no junk. This year, don't just train harder, recover smarter. Go to frogfuel.com. That's frogfuel.com. Stay unbreakable.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No